Hey, what's up, everyone? How you doing? Ben Kissel here with Henry Zebrowski.
Hi.
Hi.
Sweet. Hi.
Smoker's lung Henry Zebrowski.
I only have 4 months to live, but I'm going to rock it, my friend.
That's all you got to do. Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. Without you, we don't exist. So really, we appreciate you so much. And this is going to be such a fun episode. We've spoken about this man briefly, the subject of today's conversation briefly, that person being Joe Exotic. We spoke about him on Side Stories a couple of times. He has been a character in our periphery for, what do you think now, Henry, maybe a year or so?
About a year, yeah.
And there is a great podcast out just about Joe Exotic. It is entitled Over My Dead Body, Joe Exotic. We are honored to have with us the host of this show, Robert Moore. Thanks so much for being on the show, man.
Thanks so much, guys.
Dude, so good to be in the presence of the man who touched bodies with technically a legend. I know he's a criminal now, so it's bad. The way that I was trying to equate it, but my wife Natalie and I were talking last night, and Joe Exotic made the same kind of heel turn that Alex Jones did, where they both kind of were fun. And then you're like, oh, people getting killed. That's not good.
Or potentially, yeah. I have to ask, what got you in, Mr. Moore, what got you into Joe Exotic in the first place? How did you come about this story? How did you find out about this phenom that is Mr. Exotic?
Well, okay, so there was a fire. If you guys recall, you may not remember this, but there was a fire at the GW Zoo that burned down Joe's recording studio, which also happened to be an alligator enclosure. And so there was a story in the LA Times that said, Michael Jackson's alligators burned alive in zoo fire. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. You know, that's not a combination of words you see every day. So I click on the story and I start reading it. And it just mentions in passing Joe Exotic. It wasn't really about Joe Exotic. But then once you see the name Joe Exotic, you got to start, you know, you got to Google it, right? And this is in 2015. So this is before he ran for president. This is before he ran for governor. He was really, you know, still pretty under the radar. And I started Googling him. And you guys know, you just fall down a rabbit hole. You can't stop. Once you learn about this, you know, gay, polygamous, redneck, mullet-having, gun-toting reality show magician guy in Oklahoma, like, you just can't stop watching.
It makes me doubt my own shine. Like, if I don't follow him, it's like, then who do you follow?
Yeah, I know. he knew that he was doing that, right? Like, he was very keenly aware of how he played on people's sense of, like, absurdity. Like, he knew he was making a character out of himself. And it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And so then I went down and I interviewed him. I was going out there for this, you know, men's magazine. I was going to go interview him. And I asked him if it was okay. I said, can I come down and spend some time with you? Can I interview you? And, you know, he wrote me back this really funny email where he said something about, you know, I have a lot of magazines that are interested. I just did an interview with Playgirl magazine. They did a whole photo shoot, which I don't think is true now because that never came out. But he was playing himself up like, you know, I have a lot of people interested, but I guess I can make some time for you.
Right.
Then I went down there and he gave me basically, you know, 5 full days, let me sleep in a trailer at the zoo. And I just followed around all day long. We basically from sun up to sundown. And afterwards, I'd, you know, go out to meals with him. And we just spent like 12 to 14 hours a day together for 5 days, and I got deep into his world in that week.
Well, one thing we do know for sure, I mean, we're going to get into like what's lies, what's truth. It's very difficult to tell, but one thing we do know for sure, even that list could even continue, Robert, when it comes to his beautiful singing ability. He also, I'm going to say this, Henry, I almost cry when I hear Mr. Exotic sing his love country songs.
You've been talking about this, and I'm actually I'm getting concerned because I think at some point you're going to go to your local bar and you're going to request they put it on the jukebox.
Right. Yeah.
Well, guys, I'm gonna break your hearts, but I'm sure you know Joe is not actually singing those songs.
Your podcast is a fucking wild ride, man. Honestly, like I listened to the whole thing. It is really uncovered. suffering the twists and turns just inside of Joseph Maldonado Passage's mind, or Joseph Schreibvogel? Is that how you pronounce his real name?
Yeah, Schreibvogel is his real name. I like how you said Passage. You really made it sound fancy, very French. Yeah,
very nice.
It's Passage.
Is it just Passage?
Yeah, and now he's not even Maldonado. Now he's just Joseph Passage. He's dropped the Maldonado.
Oh, man.
So, but yeah, it's... He's, you know, and he doesn't call himself Joe Exotic. He kind of left Joe Exotic behind, so he's just Joe Passage now.
Well, he died. He died with the spotlight turning off on him because Joe Exotic only exists to perform. But when you first got there, now, you went straight to the zoo, right? Like, were you pretty much, like, Joe Exotic at that point was living at his own zoo? Or did he have a separate house?
No, he lived inside the zoo. I mean, he had a house. It was a little house, but he had a house. It was inside the fences of the zoo. So to get to his house, you had to walk through the zoo, or you could, like, drive around back. But yeah, it was literally inside the zoo, and it was surrounded by tiger and lion cages all around the house. And I think on the backside were, like, wolves or something. But there were cages
all around. Were they sad looking? Were they like, what was the quality of the zoo? Like, did you get there? What's your first reaction when you roll into his world? He's like, come in now. He's an open door to the inside of my mind.
Yeah.
Like, is it as sketch as it sounds, or surprisingly good?
It's hard to say because I went into it, like, if you're like me, you've only been to big city zoos before, you know? So they're big city zoos are really big and clean, and they have, like, enclosures where the animals are there's a little moat, and then the animals are in this wide open, natural looking thing. Joe's zoo is just steel cages. It's just like cage after cage after cage after cage, and there's a lot of tigers. Like, a big zoo, like the Oklahoma City Zoo, will have like six tigers. Joe had like 100, you know, so you've never seen anything like that when you walk in, and there's all these tigers in cages pacing in circles, and lions, and then there's ligers and all these mutant hybrids that he would create, and ligers and Thai ligers and Thai ligers. And then you would go into his house, and he had like the little baby cubs in his house. So the first day he took me into his house, which just, you know, reeked of cat piss, and everything was all scratched to shreds because he had all these cats in there and these dachshunds. He loved dachshunds. And you went in, and he would like hand you a baby liger, which is, you know, there's only maybe a handful of these on Earth, at least at that point in 2015. Really, no one else was breeding these things except this one zoo in Russia. So it was wild to hold this thing that you knew no one else, you know, had even seen before.
Right. Well, you mentioned this is a great, if you haven't read it yet, check out this New York Magazine article that Robert wrote. It is incredible. It's just called American Animals, Joe Exotic Bred Lions, Tigers, and Ligers at His Roadside Zoo. Just search that and you'll be able to find it. But you mentioned his childhood. Obviously, Joe, it seemed like he had a difficult childhood, just judging from your article. But then it also seems as if there was a lot of things that he may have sort of created in his mind, to sort of create the legend of Joseph Passage. But can you speak a little bit to what brought him to this point? Because honestly, he's like a working class Michael Jackson. He doesn't have a staff. He's just a very middle class like kid. He was just like, I want tigers, ligers, and more. And he was able to create it. So did you get any insight of like, how the hell did you get here, Joe?
Yeah, wow. So I spent like the last 4 years trying to answer that question, right? Because I was there for a week in 2015, and then I went back in 2016, and then I've been, of course, talking to him on the phone from prison or from jail. And the best I can tell, so yeah, he was a kid. He grew up in, you know, Kansas and Wyoming and Texas. He's this little gay kid who got bullied, and he was, you know, sexually abused as a kid. Like, he had a rough childhood. And so I think what he did was he created a character out of himself almost as like kind of armor. You know, he's like, I'm going to be larger than life, and no one will ever be able to hurt me the way they did when I was a kid. And so he, you know, first he went out, he went and started a pet store in Dallas, outside of Dallas. And he was known for, like, it was like the gayest pet store in America, right? So he had like all these gay flags, he had gay banners outside, he had little gay, like, doggy t-shirts. And the city didn't like it because he was putting up all these banners and he didn't have the zoning for it. So he would just double down and put down even more gay stuff, gay pride stuff, just to like piss them off.
That's correct.
Yeah, and you really have to hand it to Joe for being, you know, in these little rural areas in the South where he was, being as out as he was in like the 80s and 90s and early 2000s was not easy for him. You know, like that did take a lot of courage. And so then he went from his brother died in a car accident. And he took the money from this settlement and he put it into the zoo. And the zoo in the very beginning was just supposed to be rescuing animals. It was like, it was supposed to be this place, a really good, wholesome place where he would take in animals no one else wanted. But then what happened was he needed money. And the money, there was never enough money. And so you keep rescuing these animals. It costs a lot of money to take care of them. And the thing just turned into this whirlpool that he couldn't get himself out of because he started breeding baby tigers and lions so that people could pet the baby tigers and lions. But then they'd grow up. And once they grow up, you got to feed them, you know? So now he's getting more and more tigers and lions, and he needs more money. And so it's a feedback loop that he gets caught in, and it basically just distorts his whole world. And then, of course, he gets into fame, right? Once he gets hungry for fame and attention, it's all downhill for Joe.
Well, because then he can't. I think that he equated it all to massive success and a lot of money. I think that he kind of thought that once he flipped it, all of his financial woes would be over, but he didn't really understand that now there's a gigantic microscope on your behavior because he started doing, like, once he did the death threats to Carol Baskin. So now we know that he has been convicted to how many years in jail?
Well, so here's the thing. He's been convicted, but he hasn't been sentenced. So we don't know.
He hasn't been sentenced yet.
But he's looking at probably somewhere between 20 and 80 years for all the animal abuse charges. Yeah, so the murder for hire is 20 years, but then he's got 17 counts of selling tigers, killing tigers, you know, doing all sorts of things. Those are endangered species, right? So you can't just do whatever you want with a tiger. And so that those counts all, if you add them all up, that's like 60 years. Now, we have no idea if the judge will you know, adjudicate that, but it could be a long, long time.
So a couple questions. Do you think that he loved these tigers, actually? Or do you think that he was... What do you think his real relationship was to the animals? Did it become just more of a dependence?
He definitely loved animals when he was young. You know, he was rescuing animals from the time he was a kid. He always had pets. He had a bunch of poodles. He had a ton of birds when he was a younger guy. I don't know if he loved the tigers. He says sometimes he does, and sometimes he'd say, what I really love were the chimpanzees. Those are the ones he really loved. And the tigers were just sort of like, he's like, I don't know how I became the Tiger King. He always says that. I don't know how this happened. I just kept getting tigers because the thing is there's so many tigers in America, no one wants to take them. And so he was taking them in and taking them in, and he was breeding them like crazy. So suddenly he's the Tiger King. I don't know. I think he enjoyed his mastery over the tigers. I think he enjoyed being around them and being able to walk into a cage with them and that sense of power of not having the tigers attack him, which of course they did. I mean, there's videos online of him almost being killed by the tigers at one point, but he was really into that dominance thing. And like, look at me, I can walk among tigers. And I think he did love them to a degree, but also I think they were just a huge burden. I mean, financially, and he felt trapped in the zoo. He felt like he could never leave because he had all these animals to look after.
But he was surrounded sort of like, I don't want to use the term necessarily whack pack, but he was surrounded by a group of people that were like, I don't, it's like strangely like loyal to Joe Exotic, people that went in there and they were doing a bunch, it seems like, very dangerous shit for very little money. His relationship to his employees and to the people around him? Like, I know the podcast is a really good, like, example of, like, him, like, running his own little media network, which sounded like having him as executive producer and lead of your television show might be a lot to deal with in one go.
Well, so the thing about exotic animals is they attract exotic people, right? And there's a certain type of person who is drawn to that. And it's especially at the zoo because he paid them, I think it was anywhere between $150 and $300 a week, which is way below minimum wage, right? And just way below. And so, you know, we gave him a trailer to live in. Of course, the trailer, from what people have told me, was full of like scabies and lice and they would get all these like skin infections and stuff. And it was
that's
dirty.
That's fucking wildlife, baby, man. You're in the jungle.
But so the only people who would take that job most of the time were people who were fresh out of jail or they were fresh off of an addiction of some kind. And so they would come to Joe and he would sell it as like he was rescuing them, you know, like they were putting their lives back together by working with these animals. And so, and for some people that was true. And so you find these stories of people, there's a person who works for who worked for Joe named Saf, who I talk about in the podcast, who, you know, was former military. He showed up there and he was really in love with these tigers till one day one of the tigers got his arm, you know, bit down on it and basically shredded all the meat off of his arm and you know, he ended up losing his arm. He was back working there. I think it was 11 days later, had his arm amputated and was back working at the zoo. So he had these super, super loyal people. It's something about the exotic animals. It was also something about Joe. Like, he inspired passion in people. He had these fans who were rabid, rabid fans. He called them his fag hags, who just loved him, and they would do anything for him.
We are speaking with Robert Moore, the host of the podcast Over My Dead Body, Joe Exotic. Check out this podcast, because it is endlessly fascinating. So, Robert, it seems like, you know, just judging from the conversation that you were just having, that we were just having regarding the staff, people getting injured and going back to Joe Exotic, can you sort of, we just finished covering Joseph Smith and Mormonism, and we covered a lot of cult leaders on last podcast on the left. Can you pinpoint the charm? Can you pinpoint, like, what was it when you meet Joe? Does he come across as vulnerable, or like, what is it that would drive people to go and work with this man for minimum wage, and also being surrounded by animals that can rip your face off whenever they want?
Yeah, so there's two things. One is that when you see him online, his online persona is it's larger than life, right? And it's why we're all like so entertained by him, is because you've never seen anyone like this before. And he's so outlandish and fearless in what he says. I mean, he would tell anyone, you know, to go fuck themselves to their face. He would tell people he's going to kill them. You know, he would say all these things that no one else would really say. And so that was part of it. And then the other part was when you met him, he was actually very sweet a lot of the time and very vulnerable. And he seemed to open up to you and to be very kind of wounded and need protection. He needed people. He was also, you know, he also was, from the time I met him, was claiming he had cancer, right? He claimed he had prostate cancer. He claimed he had bone marrow cancer. He told me he was dying of bone marrow cancer. I felt terrible. You know, I don't want anyone to die of bone marrow cancer. So,
of course.
So when someone's dying like that, you want to take care of them. You want to help them. And you're like, wow, it's so heroic that even though he's dying of bone marrow cancer, he's rescuing all these animals and he's giving his life to these animals. Now, of course, he didn't have bone marrow cancer. He didn't have prostate cancer. That was all a charade. So, you know, that's what sort of happens with Joe over and over again, is people come to him and they really fall for him. And then the bubble bursts and they suddenly realize they've been lied to.
Wow. Yeah. Because then also what we discover with cult leaders, a lot of times, especially within a cult world, you've given up so much shit by the time you realize that the cult leader is full of it, that when you get to that point, you don't want to pull out because it's almost embarrassing. You look at how much you've given up for somebody else's goals, and then you just are kind of stuck, because to admit you were wrong means that you've wasted your life.
Well, and that was, I mean, it was literally true of his employees. They were stuck there. He would lock the gates at night so they couldn't leave. Most of them have any money. They didn't have any way to get out of there. He'd say, oh, just come and work for me, and then, you know, if you want to leave, it just costs you a bus ticket. But they were making so little money that they never really had the money to leave, and a lot of them would just end up running away, like literally running away in the middle of the night, because they were caught. You know, he just wouldn't. And if he knew they were going to leave, he'd withhold their paycheck. I heard that from a couple of people. So he was very, very controlling, and he hated it when people left him. I mean, I have this one really funny story, this guy named Johnny Magic. So if you've ever wondered where Joe Exotic got his name from, this is my hunch, is because when he first started out, he met this magician named Johnny Magic. And Johnny Magic was obviously, you know, he's like 19 years old. He was a pretty good magician. So Johnny Magic showed Joe Exotic how to perform magic. So Joe, back then Joe Schreibvogel, recreates himself as Joe Exotic, and he starts doing magic. And they toured together for like 6 months, where Joe would bring the tigers and Johnny Magic would do the magic, and they split apart. And what Johnny told me was that Johnny, when he, or When Johnny Magic left, and someone else confirmed this, when Johnny Magic left Joe was so mad, he went into the office in Oklahoma City and incorporated Johnny Magic's name in Oklahoma City as a DBA, which is basically like copywriting his name so that Johnny Magic, if he ever came back to Oklahoma, Joe could sue him for using the name Johnny Magic. Right, I mean, he was just like incredibly spiteful like that, in these petty ways.
Honestly, these carny wars are really phenomenal.
I really love his scorched earth policy, because this is kind of what it is. It seems like it's a constant, you're going to hurt me. All the world is out to hurt me.
Right.
I must hurt people before they can hurt me.
Yes, I'll hurt you twice as bad. I will hurt you twice as bad before you can hurt me. Exactly.
So I have a couple, more questions. Carol Baskin.
Yes.
Right now, Carol Baskin was the target of many of Joe Exotic's threats, especially towards the end, his YouTube videos. He was the person that he was convicted for threatening to murder and starting to pay dudes. Number one, how legit do you think it is that he did give money? Because it seems like he did, but it seemed like he's kind of dumb. So it seems like he did handshake deals to give dudes money to kill her. Like, how legit do you think it was that he was trying to kill her? And are you disappointed that he broke character on the stand? Like Alex Jones. Like Alex Jones, who folded. He finally folded and said, I'm a performance artist, so he could try to keep his kids.
Well, so it's a little bit complicated. I think what he did for years was he just hinted to people that they should go kill her, right? So he'd say, like, man, someone should really go kill that Carol Baskin, or someone should go break her legs. He would say it on YouTube. He'd say it on his Facebook Live videos. He was trying to get someone to do it for free, and they never did.
And as a matter of fact, in your great article in New York Mags, you actually point out to one time where Joe said that he wanted to hunt down his nemesis, and this is according to everyone at the table that he was around. Joe said, I used to never fantasize about somebody's brains on the wall. But then laughter, and then he would laugh and laugh because now, of course, he does. He fantasizes about Carol Baskin's.
That was no. I was there. That I don't mention that in the article, but I was sitting at that table when he said that, and I had a reporter running, and I was sitting there going, Joe, you know, this is on the record, and he was laughing and saying, yeah, this is on the record. You know, when he said, after I get when you read about me in the funny papers, you'll have the exclusive firsthand story. I mean, it was weird. It was like he didn't care that a reporter was there while he's saying, I fantasize about seeing Carol Baskin's brains on a wall. I've got an AR-15 I set aside just for the purpose. You know, he was talking about it really openly in 2015, which is 3 years before he gets arrested. So, you know, that whole thing. So then in terms of how it's a little bit unclear. Honestly, it's a little bit unclear to what lengths he really went to, because the first hitman, this guy named Alan Glover, works at the zoo. You know, he just took the
money. He just gave him money, and he just fucking disappeared.
He just left.
Right? Is that
yeah.
guy?
He gives him $3,000. He gives him a burner phone. He gives him a fake ID. He says, go to, you know, this is according to Alan Glover, go to Florida and kill Carol. And then Alan just kind of disappears and takes the money and doesn't end up doing it. And then Joe starts talking to a second hitman, and the second hitman, he's like, he never gives that second hitman money, but he tells him where to go and how to do it. It's enough of like a formal agreement to technically be murder for hire. And that guy was an undercover FBI agent.
Okay. Oh, yeah, of course.
I see.
They always are. They literally, they are never a hitman.
But why? Okay, so this is my question then, because going back to what we've sort of been painting the picture of Joe, he seems very untrustworthy. And untrustworthy. Why in this situation would he just be like, I gave him $3,000 proper cash. Of course he will just go and commit this act of murder. Why would he imagine that anyone on his behest would go and murder someone?
Well, so he promised him a lot more money on the back end, right? The $3,000 was just kind of like pocket money to get there and to last, you know, he was going to get $10,000 or more. Now, one thing that's funny was I, you know, as a reporter, I'm thinking, how much does it actually cost to get someone killed, right? Like, what? I have no idea. I've never tried to hire a hitman. How much do you guys think it should cost to hire a hitman?
Honestly, I would say minimum 25 G's.
Really? I was going to lowball it.
I think that 25 G's to proper scum is enough money to whack somebody.
I'm going to say $1,500.
Jesus Christ.
So here's a funny story. So I was looking through, someone had sent me this list of contacts that Joe had, and one of them was just called Mike Hit. And I thought, oh, that's interesting.
Oh my God,
so I call up Mike Hit, and Mike Hit is a former mafia hitman whose nickname is Psycho Mike. And Psycho Mike, I go and I meet Psycho Mike in this Italian restaurant in Dallas. And this is something that didn't end up making it into the podcast, unfortunately. I sit down with Psycho Mike and I ask him, you know, first of all, did Joe ever ask you to kill Carol? And he says, no, you know, he never did. And then I said, well, how much would it cost to hire a proper hitman? And he's like, oh, $50,000 minimum. He's like,
ooh,
minimum.
Okay.
Because you have to think, this is if you get caught, that's your life. It's life in prison. He's like, you're not going to do it for $3,000. That's not even a down payment on a car. Like, that's what he said. You know, he's just laughing. He's like, dude, any hitman that's going to do it for $3,000 is not a real hitman. So, you know, there's a certain degree to which I don't know. You're just like, Joe must have known it wasn't, even if it was $13,000, this guy is, there's a good chance he's going to get caught because Alan Glover was an alcoholic. He was just a kind of a disorganized guy. And
he's not a real hitman.
No, he's not a.
He's just a guy at the GD Zoo.
And so there's an element to all of this that is on the periphery of the court case, which is there's another guy involved named Jeff Lowe, right? And Jeff Lowe is the guy who came in. Joe was in financial trouble. Carol was suing him. He owed Carol $1 million. Jeff Lowe comes in. He buys the zoo from Joe. Or he takes over the zoo, and he says, I'm going to help you fight Carol in court. So now for a while, Jeff Lowe and Joe are there simultaneously. And what Joe claims is that it was actually Jeff Lowe who set up the whole murder for hire thing. Jeff Lowe was, Alan Glover used to be Jeff Lowe's employee back in South Carolina.
Oh.
And they knew each other from before. And so Joe says, actually, Jeff Lowe set all this up and I was just going along with it. That's literally the phrase his lawyer used, was he was just going along with the plan Jeff Lowe had set up. And Jeff Lowe also, when he took Alan Glover's cell phone, his old cell phone, he mailed it to Jeff Lowe. Joe did. He mailed it to Jeff Lowe in Las Vegas so that Jeff Lowe presumably could turn it on and start texting back photos and stuff from Vegas, making it look like Glover was in Vegas. But Jeff Lowe has never been arrested. Jeff Lowe was never named a suspect in all this. He's still in Oklahoma running the GW Zoo. He's still living there. So, you know,
so the zoo is still operational.
Oh, yeah. The zoo's still, you can go. If you want to go there, you can go. And it's still open. Yeah.
So Carol Baskin, her work is not over, but Carol Baskin is also, now that Joe is out of the picture, is Carol Baskin sort of like laying off?
I don't know. I'm laying off Joe? I mean, there's nothing else to do.
You're laying off the zoo?
No, like, well, I don't know
about
that.
It seems this became a war of personalities, especially once you started calling for her death.
Well, I know that Jeff Lowe has no love for Carol Baskin. So there's a good chance that things, you know, will that rivalry will heat up and she will, because he's doing all the same stuff Joe was. He's breeding ligers and little ligers and Thai ligers and selling them and letting people pet them and all this stuff. And so, you know, presumably Carol, will try to shut down Jeff Lowe just the way she shut down Joe. I haven't seen a whole lot of that yet on social media, but there's a chance that'll heat up.
You know, it's so interesting just hearing names like Psycho Mike and realizing that, like, that dude is a legitimate hitman. He probably has blood on his hands. These characters just seem straight out of a reality show. And even the way that Joe would talk about what he wanted to do to Carol Baskin's body seems like something that a B movie writer would script. So this is another quote from when you were at the table with him. This is what Joe wanted to do to mutilate her body. He says, there's going to be tree branches in every orifice, dude. And then he says, seriously, after everything she's put me through, going to jail is nothing. I'm going to die in a couple of years. What the hell? How much do you think he has a sort of a disassociated himself with reality at this point? Like, does he actually believe that he is going to put a tree branch in every orifice of Carol Baskin's body? Like, when does reality stop you know, becoming reality, and it just becomes like fantasy?
Well, that, I mean, that's a really, really interesting question. It's something I thought about a lot. It is to what degree? So if you think about Joe's life, he was making a reality show about himself, and he was spending all day on Facebook, right? And those right. two things, he was basically living, both of those are not reality. They're like a pseudo-reality. And it's like a consequence-free, weird, floating world where you're encouraged to be more and more and more outrageous. That was his whole life. And inside the zoo, you know, he was not, that wasn't reality either, because he was like king of this little kingdom of people who had to do his bidding and no one would talk back to him. So I do think he drifted away from reality. And at a certain point, I wonder if he just thought it doesn't matter. Nothing's really real. Nothing has consequences. Language, you know, doesn't have to be like, there's no such thing as truth. It all just sort of floated apart. It's all fake news. It's all bullshit. You know, he thought all journalism was bullshit. It was all like, nothing was really real to him, and so who cares? And the thing was, up until he got arrested, there were never really any consequences for it. He was always able to wriggle out of it. You know, he went around. So this whole thing starts because Carol starts attacking Joe for running this tiger cub breeding operation, tiger cub petting. And so he goes and starts a fake company that's named after her company. So her thing's called Big Cat Rescue. He starts Big Cat Rescue Entertainment. He starts going around letting people pet tiger cubs so that people will think she's a hypocrite. And they start getting all these calls saying, what the hell? I thought you were against tiger cub petting. Why are you tiger cub petting? And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. So, of course, this is like an incredibly stupid plan of Joe's, because then she sues him and she wins $1 million. But then he refuses to pay $1 million. He, you know, reincorporates his company and he goes through bankruptcy and all this stuff to get out of it. And the lawsuit drags on for years and years and years. So really, all these pranks he pulled on Carol, all the times he said he was going to kill her, up until he was arrested, there was never any consequence for it. So why wouldn't he just keep doing this stuff? All it did was get him more followers online and get him more attention. And, you know, it just never caught up with him.
Interesting.
For a while, he was like, he really was just kind of a silly figure. So people were, and he was leaning into the extravagance of Joe Exotic. So he's like, no one will, like, they'll take me seriously. I need to appear to be big and strong. What he said in his own words of his defense, when he was like, essentially, I did it so nobody would fuck with me, so that everybody could see how dangerous I was.
And you have to remember, in his eyes, he's a hero, right? Joe is the hero of this story, and Carol is the villain, right? Carol is the one whose husband mysteriously disappeared. Joe believed that she murdered her husband and fed him to her tigers.
Do you think that she murdered Don Lewis? She was another one. Because when you look her up and you look up her story, they are a pair straight from hell.
Yeah.
What is going on in the zoo world?
There's something going on between them. Their energy, I think she almost wanted him. The two of them, just like, there was a frightening sexual chemistry almost. But I wonder, I was like, did she kill Don Lewis?
I mean, that case was never solved. We have no idea. You know, there are people who will insist that clearly she did it. You know, he disappeared. He left all this money behind. It was very, the circumstances were very mysterious. Now, Carol will say all those people are lying. All those people are just saying that because they were trying to get part of Don Lewis's estate. She was never named as a suspect in the case, but then again, no one else was ever named as a suspect in the case. We just don't know. That's just one of those big question marks that you know, it drives you nuts as a reporter because you want to find out, but it's a cold case. I mean, we don't know.
So that is insane, by the way, that like most people go through their entire lives not having a spouse die, like dead, like mysteriously, like most people. Not everyone, I guess. So when you mentioned that Joe is the hero of his own story, can you explain what are the attributes that make him a hero in his own mind? What kind of character is he then?
Yeah. So
does he see it like?
So Joe is this, you know, he's this plucky, gay, rebellious, like, fuck you attitude guy who's just scraping by with barely any money, lives in this rundown, shitty little house. And meanwhile, he has Carol Baskin, who has all this money, who's, you know, a millionaire in Florida, attacking him with all of these big, very well-funded animal rights organizations on her side, like PETA and HSUS, all these other groups that have millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars to beat up on poor old Joe Exotic, who's just this... And he also looked at it as like a kind of a... American freedom. You know, he said, if you have the freedom to pump out 10 kids, and he hated kids, by the way. He told me hilarious. He said, I wish they were all drowned at one point. He did not like kids, even though he pretended like he did.
It's really sad that he's in jail because they don't get podcasts, and I think he'd love our show.
I know.
Like, that's really the sad thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there, you know, he could potentially, if someone wants to call him up and play it to him through the phone, you could have him, but it would cost $1 a minute.
Yeah, that's an expensive episode.
I mean, I would do it.
But so he used to always say, if you can pump out 10 kids, why can't I have 10 tiger cubs? You know, like, if you can afford to raise those kids, why can't I, if I can afford to take care of these tigers and it's safe and no one's going to get hurt, why can't I do that? What's wrong with that? That was his logic, and he really believed this was, you know, he thought that basically the animal rights organizations were this tyrannical, left-wing, coastal, elitist phenomenon that he was fighting back from the heartland. And a lot of people, when right around the time of the Zanesville, you guys remember the Zanesville Zoo massacre?
Zoo?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, the guy let all the animals out, and he shot himself. There was a big conspiracy theory movement around that, that in fact that had been done by the feds, and it was all done to try to push new legislation to shut down exotic animal ownership in America. And among those
who's
people,
doing this?
Joe was a hero.
Who
Joe was like
this?
A figurehead. Yeah, I mean, it's a very insular world. If you've never spent time in among exotic animal people, it's hard to understand, but there were a lot of people who really believed that.
Okay.
Wow.
And they said Joe's the only one brave enough to speak out for our rights. No one else is brave enough because they're afraid of the feds, they're afraid of HSUS, they're afraid of PETA.
It is interesting, going back to what you were talking about, this man seems like the animal version of the fella that was behind Ruby Ridge. He's a sovereign citizen. Instead of collecting guns, he's collecting tigers and ligers and lions and more, which is just really fascinating to see the psychology at play here. To think that it was a conspiracy theory by the federal government, obviously there in Ohio, when all those animals were released by their owner after he shot himself, or before he shot himself in the head.
Well, yeah, and like the Bundys, Joe had tons of guns, right? I mean, he had at least one, maybe two AR-15s, a bunch. He always carried 357 Magnums on his person.
Oh, never mind then.
He had explosives.
He's doing the twofer. Okay.
He's in the whole collection.
He would take these things called Tannerite, you know, these exploding targets that you can get at Walmart, and you would tape them together and you'd put them on stuff and you'd shoot them from afar and create these enormous explosions so big they'd be heard from miles around. And he said if the feds ever came from him, he built a watchtower in the middle of the zoo and he's going to surround the zoo with these exploding targets. And so if the feds ever came from him, he would sit up in the watchtower and shoot the exploding targets. I mean, he said it was going to be a small Waco. That's the words that he used. If they ever try to come from my animals, it'll be a small Waco.
Damn, dude. Again, I got to start floating it if they ever come for our microphones, man.
Yeah, small Waco. We are speaking with Robert Moore, the host of the podcast Over My Dead Body, Joe Exotic. Absolutely amazing work on this podcast, by the way. So if you haven't listened, make sure you check it out to hear all the information you need to hear about Joe Exotic.
Yeah, Carol, man, looking at pictures of Carol Baskin, her just applauding. The two of them are just such good. What a good, horrible Joker versus Batman this is.
Who's Batman and who's Joker?
It's really perfect because they have completely inverse life trajectories where Carol starts out breeding cats and breeding all these bobcats and things and selling them. And she, you know, of course, I mean, her life story is wild. You know, when she was 15 years old, she ran away from home. She was 17. She got married. I think she was 19. She had her first kid. She gets in a fight with her husband. She runs out the door and this guy pulls up in a pickup truck with a pistol on the passenger side seat. He says, "Get in. You can hold the gun on me. If you don't trust me, you can hold the gun on me." And she gets in. She takes the gun. She points it at him. Drives a little while. He pulls over, and he wraps his hands around her throat. And he says, "You know, I could choke the life out of you right now if I wanted to." And by this point, Carol has been through so much shit in her life. I mean, she's been on her own since she was 15. She was homeless at one point and sleeping under cars and hitchhiking all around. So she's like, she doesn't care. She just looks at him, you know, with this sort of cold stare. And because she thinks she wasn't afraid, he didn't give him a thrill. And so he relaxed his hands and he let go of her. and then took her to a motel room, and they spent the night together that night. And then they started having, this is Don Lewis. This is how she meets Don Lewis, the millionaire who, you know, she later married. It, so her life was really wild in the beginning, and she was breeding all these cats. And then she has a realization and becomes the savior of cats. Stops breeding, stops letting people touch them. Meanwhile, Joe, on the other hand, starts out as a savior of big cats, and then he slowly metamorphoses into a guy who was breeding tigers and selling tigers and shooting tigers and doing all these, you know, pretty terrible right. things, honestly. In the end, he was doing some, I mean, from what everything, all my reporting says, he was really treating the animals pretty poorly right at the end. So yes. their lives are kind of these inverse trajectories in that way, where Carol ends up being this, you know, would-be savior of animals, and Joe became this, whatever Joe became.
Well, so now are you guys still in contact?
I haven't talked to Joe since. No, I'm in contact with a lot of people from that I interviewed from the podcast, but I haven't talked to Joe since. I'm kind of waiting to see if he wants to. I mean, he can email me if he wants from prison. I can't call him. He can only call me. I haven't heard it, and I don't think he's heard the podcast, so I don't even know, you know, what he would think of it.
I'll tell you what, it's pretty fair. I mean, you really spell out the end. It's a lot of facts. You do a very good job of, like, because it's not that I don't know what the term is. I don't know if I'd say that I feel bad for Joe or connect to Joe. I think Joe just went a little too far.
Right.
And from what I think that what you said, I think you had your interview with somebody said when he lost his first husband,
yeah,
his first husband was the one that kind of kept the line between Joseph Schriebvogel
yeah.
and Joe Exotic. And that once he was gone, he fully gave in to Joe Exotic, and then Joe Exotic took the driver's seat.
Yeah, his first husband died of HIV and basically died in Joe's arms and broke his heart. And a lot of people say he changed after that.
Wasn't there some speculation that maybe he had something to do with the disappearance of his latest boyfriend as well? Wasn't there some sort of speculation of foul play there as well?
He didn't disappear. Are you talking about Travis, the one who died? So what happened was Travis shot himself by accident. He had a gun. It was a Ruger, and he thought it wouldn't go off if the clip was out of it. And so it's a little bit unclear what exactly happened, whether he, dropped the clip out and pulled the trigger, or if he just had intended to drop the clip. But what we think happened was he took the clip out of the gun, he held it to his head, and he pulled the trigger, and it went off. And he thought it wouldn't go off, and he killed himself. What some people afterwards speculated is, well, maybe Joe tampered with the gun. Maybe Joe somehow set this up. I don't think there's any evidence to suggest that. Police have told me that's not true. I don't think anyone believes that at this point, but after he got arrested, of course, now it's like, who knows what else he did?
Interesting. Well, I mean, the whole thing, just to sort of wrap it up, and again, if you want more details, please check out this podcast.
Listen to the show. It's highly, highly entertaining.
You have to. And thank you so much for being on the show. But I guess to sort of my final sort of thoughts, I suppose, are the irony that now Joe Exotic, a man who kept animals in cages for so many years, who lived this crazy life around criminals, is now himself the one kept in a cage, surrounded by more criminals. Do you think if Joe does end up getting a healthy sentence, it looks like at least 20 years if they run these sentences concurrently, which would be a miracle for him, what do you think his life looks like now? Do you feel like he's... to me, he doesn't seem like someone who would be totally messed up in prison. I could almost see him enjoying the structure in some strange way.
No, I think he hates it. I mean, from everything he told me, he hates it because he's in jail still. He's been in jail for over a year now. And and jail is way worse than prison. In jail, you don't have any time outside. You don't have the food is terrible. You know everything. There's no visitation rights. He has way fewer rights, and so he's going nuts in there. He hates it. He hates that he never gets any fresh air. He hates that. You know, the biggest thing for Joe is that he's addicted to attention, and it's very hard for him to get attention in there. You know, he spends a lot of time buying his fellow inmates food and phone credits and stuff. He gets a lot of donations, and then he gives it away to the other inmates. And so I think he's fairly popular in there. At least that's the impression he gives. But his only interaction with the world is through email. So he emails stuff to his followers, And he, you know, his minions, some people call them, and they go on Facebook and they post his email. So he still has a really robust Facebook presence,
okay.
But it's all coming through the email. And so that part, I think, it's why, you know, people always ask me, why did he talk to you so much? Why does he talk to all these reporters, even though he probably knows you're not going to portray him in the best light now that he's convicted? And the truth is, I think he just really wants attention. He just wants someone to listen to him. He just wants someone to, you know, and he's not going to get that from here on out. It's going to be, I don't think he's going to enjoy prison. It's pretty sad.
And of course, growing up the middle child, he has four siblings. He's the middle child. It sounds like so-called middle child syndrome on steroids, where he just so desperately wants to be hurt.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Henry, do you have anything else?
No, dude, thank you so much for answering all my questions. I've been very, very curious about his inner life, and I'm certain that we'll have more. And then I don't think this is going to be the last we hear from Joe Exotic.
No, I don't think so. I mean, there may well be new developments in the case. Who knows? I know there's a documentary coming out in February, which will be, you know, a 6-part documentary. I'm not allowed to say where, but that will be a pretty big deal. Yeah, there will be
awesome.
More. Who knows what else will come of the Joe Exotic story?
Awesome, man. Again, check out Over My Dead Body, Joe Exotic, hosted by the man you've just been listening to, Robert Moore. Thank you so much, Robert. Really appreciate having you on the show. And as this story develops, please come back and let us know what else you've learned.
Thanks, guys. This is fun.
Yeah, please do, man. This is awesome.
Live from your grave.
All right, there it was, our interview with Robert Moore. That is endlessly fascinating. Crazy story.
Joe Exotic's great. It's American hero, technically. But purely American hero.
I don't know if you can say that.
Problematic figure, yes.
Sure.
An expression of our essential freedoms, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a problem. With freedom comes, you know, birds sometimes will fly over an ocean, don't realize how big the ocean is because birds don't have maps.
Right.
Sometimes birds just collapse from exhaustion in the middle of the water and they just fucking die in the middle of the water. American bird. New
you know what?
To
All
head
right.
for where there's no limit. But
okay.
sometimes you find out there's no oasis there to save you.
No, that's very true. No island to land on. Joe Exotic. And again, we'll have Robert on back. We'll have him back on as soon as maybe after he's sentenced. And, you know, it does seem Joe is not a spring chicken. So even if he does get 20 years, that could be a life sentence in itself. So who knows
yes.
what happens. All right, everyone. Thank you all so much for listening. And thank you all so much again for giving to our Patreon. Without you, none of this is possible. Can't wait to see you all out on the road. And yeah, that's about it, everyone. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Magustalations.
Hail me. Thank you for your money.
Thank you. Hail Gein. Is that how Marcus
Whoa, Marcus?
Hail Gein.
Whoa, Marcus.